Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome in to another episode of Locked On Bulls here Tuesday, March 6th, 2018. Locked On Bulls is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Be sure you're following us on social media on Twitter at Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Locked On Bulls. Like and follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere and everywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts, you will find us. And of course, we also have our new text and voicemail line that you should be hitting us up at. That is 331-979-1369. If you have any questions for our weekly Wednesday mailbag episodes, any comments while you're watching these Bulls games in the evenings, shoot us a text at that line, or you can leave us a voicemail, and we're going to start to be playing some of those favorite voicemail rants of ours about these Bulls games that we're watching in this tough post-All-Star break stretch, finishing out the regular season. So you can text us, or you can leave us a voicemail. Again, that line is 331-979-1369. And of course, you can also, as always, email us your Bulls comments and questions at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Well, as I said, I am Matt Peck, handling things on this Tuesday episode of Locked On Bulls. Jordan Malley, my co-host, is out today. He will be back tomorrow. But hopefully we will have some fun and talk about that Bulls-Celtics game from last night. Woof. If you missed that one, if you didn't tune in, be glad that you didn't. And of course, as we do on every Tuesday show, after we do this Bulls Celtics recap, we will do some This Week in Bulls History. We got some fun ones on deck for you there. So with that being said, let's dive right in to this Bulls Celtics nightmare from Monday night. Now, I think it's pretty clear that the Celtics, who were once again playing without Kyrie Irving, well, they wanted to make a statement, because as part of that surprising winning streak that the Bulls had back in December, the Celtics were in that game also playing without Kyrie Irving. This time last night, he was out nursing a sore knee, and the Bulls shocked everybody by beating the Celtics even without Kyrie Irving. Nobody thought the Bulls would beat the Celtics in that game a couple months back, and the Bulls did so, and did so pretty handily, pretty dominantly. I'm pretty sure that the Celtics remembered that and wanted to send the Bulls a message in this one. And even without Kyrie Irving, they made quick work of the Bulls. Jumped out to a 35-16 lead after one quarter, expanded that to a 25 or 26-point lead at the half. And really, I mean, the final score, 105-89, it was not that close. This one was over pretty much as soon as it started. The Bulls outscored the Celtics 36-19 in the fourth quarter, when the Celtics had clearly already stopped trying because this game was well in hand. They had strong games from Jaylen Brown, who led Boston with 21 points. Al Horford added 13, Jason Tatum 14. And Greg Monroe chipped in with 10 off the bench. Terry Rozier had 13 off the bench. And the Bulls' key guys, another tough night. Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn combined to go just 4 of 21 from the field, including 1 of 7 from downtown. Dunn with 7 points, LaVine with just 4. and they each played nearly 30 minutes. Markkanen had a respectable evening, finishing with 12 points and 4 rebounds on 5 of 10 shooting, hit 2 of his 5 three-point attempts. But Bobby Portis, have to say he was a disappointment in this one, getting the starting spot at center, replacing Cristiano Felicio after Felicio got his stretch of 5 games starting at the 5. That's something that Jordan and I talked about in yesterday's episode, what kind of impact Portis moving from his reserve role, which he had been playing very well, into being a part of this Bulls starting lineup. And Portis shot just 2 of 8, missed all 3 of his 3-point attempts, and finished with just 7 points. So this game, I mean, what really can you say other than even without Kyrie Irving, this Celtics team is a much more talented, much more well-rounded team. And Zach LaVine, among others, had some pretty harsh self-reflection after the game, you know, saying we can't let this happen again. It was a terrible effort on our part. We came out so flat and just couldn't get anything going. Yeah, he's not wrong. You don't really expect your players to say something else after a loss like this, when they just get absolutely dominated from start to finish. You have to own up to it. And at the same time, I think the Bulls were, this was a buzzsaw that was just waiting for them. Because as I said, the Celtics are not only one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference and in the league right now, they were a team that really very badly wanted to vindicate themselves after losing to this Bulls team just a couple of months back. And they came out and played aggressively. They came and played with a purpose. They also dominated the Bulls inside. And that's something that Jordan and I talked about yesterday, as far as not only the benching of their reliable veteran center, Robin Lopez, to try to get some of these younger guys some minutes and some time to be evaluated down the stretch of this season, but also moving Bobby into that starting lineup and having him and Markkanen sharing those front court duties of protecting the paint and trying to get the Bulls to at least play evenly when it comes to rebounds. And the Bulls were dominated in both of those categories. The Celtics out-rebounded the Bulls 53-36 in this one and outscored the Bulls in the paint 46-26. So even when the Bulls actually, surprisingly, won the turnover battle, the Bulls turned the ball over just 13 times, the Celtics turned the ball over 18 times. If the Celtics are getting that many easy looks inside and out-rebounding the Bulls fairly handily, there's really not much you could do about that. The Celtics also had a respectable night shooting from beyond the arc, 12 of 36 for 33.3%. Bulls, 12 of 33, 36.4. So they actually play them evenly from downtown. But as I said before, Chris Dunn didn't really help out in that department. Zach LaVine had another rough night shooting. Really, Denzel Valentine was the only bright spot for the Bulls in this one. He led the Bulls with 20 points off the bench in 29 minutes, hitting 7 of his 11 shots, including hitting 4 of 6 from downtown. He also grabbed 5 rebounds and dished out 2 assists, added 2 steals and a block. A very nice game from Denzel Valentine. But if Denzel Valentine is your best player on the floor and you're playing one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, that probably means you're going to lose, and lose by a lot. And that's exactly what happened. Felicio and Payne, the two tanking generals, as we are fighting our way through the back third, the back quarter of this regular season, did get some significant minutes off the bench. Payne played 20 minutes, Felicio 22. Felicio had 8 points and Payne 10. Two of their more respectable outings. Felicio also grabbed 5 rebounds. Campaign did have a couple of just head-slapping, painstaking, goofball plays in this one, including a turnover where he essentially just dribbled the ball off his foot. You expect that. We've expected to see things like that from Campaign since he has been inserted into this rotation. Noah Vonleh, a guy that Jordan and I talked about in yesterday's episode, a guy that we wanted to see get some more minutes down the stretch if Bobby is going to remain in this starting lineup at the five and Felicio is being relegated to the bench. Jordan and I are in agreement that, even though it is a small sample size, neither of us are really excited about the prospect of seeing Felicio get more minutes this season other than for the purpose of tanking and losing games, whereas Noah Vonleh is a guy that you want to get a look at. You want to use this opportunity, the remaining 18, 19 games this season, to see if Vonleh is a guy worth keeping around. Vonleh played 17 minutes in this one, but was not a huge factor. He was just 1 of 7 from the field for 3 points. Did grab 9 rebounds, however. So, yuck. I mean, that was an ugly, ugly game to watch. There's really not much more you can say about it. The Celtics are a much better team than these Bulls are right now. It's a loss that gets the Bulls back in the right direction after a win against Dallas really hurt their situation as far as the tankathon standings go. And the Bulls have an opportunity in front of them with games against both Memphis and Atlanta coming up later this week to get themselves back a little bit closer towards the top of those tankathon standings. Because as things sit right now, even after that loss to Boston, the Bulls' record at 21-42. Of the 8 worst teams in the league, the Bulls are on the outside looking in as far as the lottery is concerned. There are 4 teams just a game and a half ahead of them, or behind them, however you want to look at it. Brooklyn, Orlando, Atlanta, and Sacramento all currently at 20-44. Then you have Dallas at 19-45. Phoenix, who lost again last night, 19-47. And the hapless, hopeless Memphis Grizzlies, 18-45. The team with the fewest wins in the NBA. They have lost their last 14 games. Their last 14 games. Y'all thought that Bulls 10-game losing streak was something special? Ah, that's nothing. Memphis has lost 14 straight, and they are coming to Chicago. They'll be playing the Bulls tomorrow night at 7 o'clock Central Time. That's a big one. If the Bulls can throw out a significant portion of minutes for Felicio and Campaign and Noah Vonleh and, hey, maybe Jarrell Eddie, who played just 3 minutes in that loss to Boston last night. Maybe they'll give him some minutes, because as much as you want to see strong performances from guys like Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen and Bobby Portis and even David Nwaba, the starting five for the Bulls in Boston probably will be the same starting five against Memphis. You want the Bulls to lose to Memphis. I mean, it's that simple. That's unfortunately what this season has become about. But it is in the Bulls' best interest to lose that game to Memphis. They also are playing the Atlanta Hawks later in the week. You want to lose that game too. I mean, there's no two ways about it. There is one goal for the remainder of this season. And the Bulls front office can tell you there's multiple goals. Fred Hoiberg can tell you there's multiple goals, and they involve seeing strong play from some of the young guys that are making up this Bulls core right now. And you can believe that Fred Hoiberg says that the goal is also to get some wins. And I think he is trying to get some wins. It's a tough position for a coach to be in. But the Bulls have some games in this upcoming stretch that could be vital to where they end up picking in this top-heavy 2018 NBA draft. As I said, they're hosting the Memphis Grizzlies on tomorrow, Wednesday. They also will be playing Detroit a couple of days after that, and that one's on the road. On the road against Atlanta on March 11th before coming home to host the Clippers. That is certainly a game that the Bulls could lose. And then they play Memphis again next week, March 15th. It's a big, important stretch of games for the Bulls. Yeah, would you ideally like to see the Bulls get better performances in those games than what we've seen from the trio of Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine recently? Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to see that trio perform better than they have recently. I feel like it's pretty undeniable at this point that Markkanen has hit some version of the rookie wall. Although he did have the best game of the three last night, he still is having some issues with his shot. He looks a little bit worn down. Obviously, the outside of the game of basketball factor is the fact that he is a new father. I'm sure that that has caused him to lose some sleep, certainly put some stress on his mind, and maybe it's a combination of that and the fact that this is still just a very young kid who played one season of college ball and is not used to playing this many games. And really, before Robin Lopez was sat down for the sake of minutes for the young guys, Markkanen has probably been the most consistently active player on this team. You know, missed a few games in that stretch when he was on paternity leave, missed a couple of games with some sore back issues. But other than that, has played more than Dunn, has played more than LaVine. Because of the suspension, has played more than Bobby Portis. And he's been a starter since day one. That's a lot of games for a rookie. And I think he's hit the wall. I think it's tough to argue against that. Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, meanwhile, I think it's just a matter of them trying to find some chemistry. They still haven't had that many games together on the court because of their injuries that were poorly timed and disjointed. And that's something that LaVine talked about after the blowout loss to Boston, still trying to find chemistry. And the fact that with this new rotation and these shakeups with the lineup, it is challenging to develop some consistent chemistry. Absolutely, that is undeniable. It's hard to find that chemistry. It's worrisome that even though this is a small sample size, you still have not seen Dunn and LaVine play very well off of each other. And that's something that the Bulls can try to make a focus in the offseason. Hopefully those two do a lot of work together in the offseason. And then coming into training camp before the upcoming 2018-19 season, that's a focus for Fred Hoiberg and his coaching staff. How do you get these two guys, Dunn and LaVine, to play well alongside one another? How do you get them to find open looks for each other? How do you balance them being the ball dominant player on the floor and finding looks for themselves? And how does Lauri Markkanen fit into that? And if Bobby Portis, whose team option has been picked up, who the team is talking about signing to an extension this summer, is the guy that they are going to keep in that starting lineup playing in the front court along with Markkanen moving forward, how does he fit into that? Because as much attention has been paid to the tank and the Bulls shifting gears and player evaluation and all that kind of stuff as we work our way through the back end of the season here, it's kind of hard to ignore the signs that as promising as Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen have all looked independently from one another, when Dunn has been out and LaVine has had a big game and vice versa, Markkanen with some of his impressive games as a rookie where he's been very dominant, very aggressive, the Bulls really haven't had that many, if any, examples of a game where all three of them play well and all three of them play well off each other. That's going to be an issue. And it is definitely something that is worth worrying about, at least right now. So with that, hopefully you missed that Bulls-Celtics game from Monday night. It was not fun. It was an ugly game to watch. And I mean, at least from the pure basketball fans' perspective, you got to see some nice stuff from that Boston Celtics team that was a good, strong win while missing their best player. That's a good Boston team. 45-20 right now, fighting with Toronto for that number one seed in the East. Cleveland's way back behind them. And it'll be exciting to see just what this Boston team can do in the playoffs. And obviously, depending on how those Eastern Conference standings shake out, who they will meet and in which round. Because I think even in their post-trade struggles, the Cavs had that quick uptick where they, you know, won a few games after the huge trade deadline roster overhaul. And they've hit some rocky times after that initial surge. They did get a win against the Pistons last night, but obviously I think it's still Boston, Toronto, and Cleveland. Nobody really expects a team outside of those three to come out of the East, and it's just a matter of which of those three teams will be facing each other in the conference finals. Excited to see how that works out. Obviously, it would be great to get Boston-Cleveland because you got the Kyrie versus his old team, Kyrie versus LeBron. It would be great. It would be great entertaining NBA playoff storyline. Bulls fans, well, we can watch. We can watch the NBA playoffs with no stress, which honestly I'm looking forward to. It'll be nice. So with that, let us get to our weekly segment, This Week in Bulls History. This is a lot more fun than talking about a game in which the Bulls were blown out by the Celtics, trailing by as many as 37 points and only managing to score 29 at halftime. So let's start out with a couple of fun little throwback stats and noteworthy individual statistics. On March 5th, 1969, legendary Bulls guard Jerry Sloan scores a career-high 43 points versus Milwaukee. Jerry Sloan, of course, both a player and a coach for this great, proud Chicago Bulls franchise, one of a very few number of people to have their number retired and hanging in the rafters at the United Center currently. So his career-high, Sloan's career-high, came on March 5th, 1969, 43 points. Here's another fun one. On March 8th, 1994, the Michael Jordan-less Bulls, led by Scottie Pippen, still one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference while MJ was playing for the Birmingham Barons. Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan's replacement as the starting shooting guard on that team, Pete Myers, who we gave a shout-out to in a recent Bulls history for his career high in a Bulls win in this very same season. On March 8th, against the Atlanta Hawks, Scottie Pippen and Pete Myers become the first pair of teammates in NBA history to each score and convert on a four-point play. Crazy. Who would have known? It seems like that's pretty late in the existence of the NBA. Not until 1994 did a pair of teammates both convert on a four-point play. That's crazy. Crazy to me that it took that long. But that is a piece of history that belongs to the Chicago Bulls. Scottie Pippen and Pete Myers. Pretty cool one. All right, let's get to another classic in the greatest of all time category. You know who I'm talking about, none other than Michael Jordan. In the early stages of the Bulls-Pistons rivalry, Michael Jordan goes nuts. On March 4th, 1987, just a couple of weeks before yours truly was born, just hanging out in my mom's uterus waiting to come out, already a Bulls fan in utero, believe me, I was there, I was watching this game from a mom's tummy. March 4th, 1987, the Bulls win 125-120 in overtime against the Detroit Pistons. And the Bulls had a lot to overcome. This, of course, was the Pistons team that featured Adrian Dantley, who was then, of course, before the Pistons went on to win their back-to-back titles, was traded away for Mark Aguirre because Dantley and Isaiah Thomas were clashing and fighting over whose team it was. But before that happened, Dantley was a big-time scorer for those mid to late 80s Pistons teams. And Dantley dropped 32 points in this one. Isaiah Thomas had a monster double-double with 31 points and 18 assists. 31 and 18 dimes for Isaiah Thomas. The other role players on those Piston teams also coming up big. Joe Dumars had 19. Bill Laimbeer, 18 and 7 boards. I mean, monster performances across the board for that very good Pistons team. But hey, Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan did his thing, pouring in 61 points on 22 of 39 shooting from the field and going 17 of 18 from the free throw line. Also grabbed 7 rebounds, dished out 3 assists, came up with 3 steals and 3 blocks. Wow. 61 points. At the time, it was the career high for MJ in a regular season game. Because remember, of course, in the playoffs the season before, 1986, he had his famous 63-point performance at the Boston Garden against the Celtics. So this 61 was a regular season career high for MJ and also a Chicago Bulls franchise record for points in a regular season game. I got the video up, some of the highlights and incredible, spectacular buckets that MJ was able to pour in that one on our Twitter feed at Locked On Bulls. Check it out. There's one play in particular, one shot where MJ is double teamed. He jumps, has his incredible only MJ. No one else has ever had that kind of hang time. Double pumps while in the air to avoid the shot being contested from two different Pistons players and knocks down the shot. I mean, looks like time is frozen and he's hanging in the air and he somehow has enough time to avoid the shot contest, double pumps, and nails the shot. I mean, remarkable stuff from MJ. Absolutely unreal to watch. And his 61 points and a few contributions from other folks was just enough. And the Bulls were trailing late in this one, trailing entering the fourth quarter, and MJ poured it in the fourth quarter. 61 points. What a performance from his airness, from the greatest. Fast forwarding to some more recent Bulls history, and we'll wrap up with this one. A couple of weeks ago, Jordan and I talked about a Bulls Heat game from the 2010-11 season that took place in Chicago, and that one was in late February, where Derrick Rose had himself a big night, hit some big shots down the stretch, and then, of course, had that great drive and dish to Luol Deng in the corner for the three, the go-ahead three. The Bulls upset the heavily favored Heatles of LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. And that Locked On Bulls video that we put up for you guys went absolutely viral. Everybody loved it. Everybody loves reminiscing about that season when that MVP Derrick Rose-led team jumped to a huge 62-20 season, get all the way to the conference finals where they face this very same Miami team, and after dominating in game one, lose 4 straight. And that is the closest the Bulls have ever gotten to the NBA throne since the days of MJ. So that was a fun one to relive, and guess what? Here we have another one. On March 6th, 2011, this one is on the road in Miami. Coming into this game, it was a very tight race for who would be the one seed in the East. Miami was 43-19, the Bulls 42-18. So with this win, an 87-86 win over the Miami Heat, the Bulls put themselves in control as the one seed in the Eastern Conference. They would not relinquish that. They would hold on to the one seed. And this 87-86 win over Miami completed the season sweep of the Heatles. A good game across the board from the Bulls' biggest players in this one. Derrick Rose led the team with 27 points. That was a game high outdoing LeBron James, who had 26, Bosch 23, and Wade 20 in this one. So the Heat's big three showed up, combined for 69 points. But Rose had 27, Luol Deng 18, Joakim Noah 11 and 8 boards, Carlos Boozer a double-double with 12 and 10 boards. And this one was a tight one. Down to the wire, Derrick Rose had a stretch of scoring 6 straight points late in the fourth quarter to put the Bulls ahead. Then the Miami Heat come back. Mario Chalmers makes a big three-point shot after Dwayne Wade was double-teamed. He swings the ball to LeBron, who swings the extra pass to Chalmers. And then Luol Deng gets fouled, hits one of two free throws, but Joakim Noah comes up with a huge offensive rebound, tap back to Luol, who's making a run in, trying to get the offensive rebound after missing the free throw. Luol gets fouled, goes back to the free throw line, hits both of those to put the Bulls ahead. Miami has the final possession, trailing 87-86. Joakim Noah ends up isolated one-on-one, guarding LeBron James out at the perimeter, and Joakim Noah, step for step, follows LeBron James, tracks LeBron James as LeBron drives left as he loves to do. Joakim makes LeBron take a very difficult contested shot that he misses. Dwayne Wade is able to get the rebound, offensive rebound. Luol Deng tracks him down and contests that shot, which Wade misses at the buzzer. The Bulls seal the win, and one of the greatest Tom Thibodeau gifts of all time is his reaction after the Bulls squeak out this 87-86 win, a emphatic roaring fist pump, which is a part of the great SportsCenter highlights package of this game. We put that one for you up on Twitter as well. Check out that video, the highlights of that game, and the final moments of the fourth quarter. That's on our Twitter feed at Locked On Bulls. So another great moment in that Bulls-Heat rivalry that really, with this game, started to pick up all kinds of steam. People started talking about, oh man, like we can't wait. It's, you know, it's going to be Bulls Heat at the conference finals. The Bulls, for all of the great impressive things Miami has done this season and after the slow start they got off to, and you know, people were talking about, oh my gosh, is Eric Spoelstra going to get fired and all of this. The Heat really found their stride in the middle and latter stages of that season and looked damn good. Looked virtually unbeatable a lot of the time, but the Bulls in the regular season had their number. And of course, you know, a lot of that goes into the talking points that Bulls fans love to still dissect about Tom Thibodeau as a coach and his coaching style, playing his guys too hard, too many minutes, treating every regular season game like it's a do-or-die game 7 of the playoffs. All right, okay, sure. Personally, I've just always thought that regular season wins don't necessarily mean anything when you're comparing it to who has the edge in a best of 7 series. And as good as Derrick Rose was, Miami's best players were collectively better than the Bulls' best players, those surrounding Derrick Rose. It's that simple. As soon as Miami decided to put LeBron on Derrick Rose in games 2 through 5, the Bulls' best player, arguably the series' best player, was neutralized. And thus, maybe he wasn't the series' best player. Because all it took was putting LeBron clamping down on Derrick Rose defensively, and the other role players, Luol Deng, Carlos Boozer, Joakim, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to overcome the Bulls' best player being neutralized like that. But the talk about, you know, regular season wins against Miami, well, you know, they were pointless, they were meaningless, and it was just, you know, significant individual examples of Tom Thibodeau riding his guys too hard. You look at the box score of minutes in this game, the third and final regular season game against Miami. Yeah, Luol Deng played 42 and a half minutes. Derrick Rose played 38 and change. Joakim, 35. Okay, cool. LeBron James played 42. Just like Luol. Chris Bosh played 42. Dwayne Wade, 38. You play your best players the big minutes. It's always going to be like that. Something that a recent guest of ours, Chris Bleck of ESPN 1000, was kind of saying the same thing. And personally, when you watch those regular season games that have the intensity and the level of competition that are against, you know, it's two big-time playoff-bound teams, two juggernauts going head-to-head, and it feels like a playoff game, you're really going to whine to me about the fact that Luol Deng played 42 minutes? Come on. There's so much entertainment value in those regular season games that are two teams pitted against one another who everybody is thinking, everybody in the room, everybody watching at home from their living rooms is thinking, these teams are going to face off in the playoffs. And everything leading up to that is fuel for that rivalry fire. And that Bulls Heat rivalry was so damn good. So damn good. Unfortunate for Bulls fans that they never got the best of them. Injuries had a lot to do with that. But that Bulls Heat rivalry and this regular season win on March 6th, 2011 to complete the series sweep. And I know I said the regular season wins, they don't necessarily give you a whole lot of confidence as far as who can win in a best of seven series. But damn, I'd be lying to myself, and I know you'd be lying to yourself, Mr. and Mrs. Bulls fan out there, if you didn't think after this win and a season sweep of the highly touted, we're going to throw a rally and a parade and a party for ourselves before we even win a single damn game, Hollywood as hell, Miami Heat, you are lying to yourself. If that close win, three wins over that Miami Heat team in the regular season, you didn't let those thoughts creep into your mind of, you know what? These Bulls might have enough. These Bulls might have their number. They might have what it takes to beat the Heat in a best of seven series. Hell, we've beat them three times. If we've beaten them three times and lost to them zero times, in a couple months from now, we can beat them four out of seven. It's illogical. It's illogical to think the regular season wins means you have an advantage over an opponent in a best of seven series. Best of seven series, different animal altogether. But come on, Bulls fans, you know that that's what you were thinking when they got this season sweep over Miami. I was thinking it. Not ashamed to admit it. Not ashamed one bit. Because that's how exciting it was. Rooting for that team. That team that got as close and closer than any other Bulls team, any other compiled Bulls roster has ever gotten since 1998. And those games, those scrap it out, tough defense, fighting on both ends of the court, just battles against Miami in the regular season, damn were they fun. Damn were they fun. So that's it. There you have it. That's this week in Bulls history. Hope you enjoyed looking back on it. A reminder, you can get some great highlight videos of MJ's 61-point performance and that Bulls Heat game from 2011 by going to our Twitter page at Locked On Bulls. Give it a like, give it a retweet, and spread the love all around Bulls Nation. That's going to do it for today's episode. We'll get Jordan back in the fold tomorrow, Wednesday, where we will be doing our weekly mailbag segment and giving you all a preview of that crucial, vital tankathon matchup between the Bulls and the Grizzlies tomorrow, Wednesday night. So be sure to send us your questions for our Wednesday mailbag. You can email them to us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at LockedOnBulls. Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and of course our brand spanking new text and voicemail line. We have been getting blown up on that line, appreciate everybody who's sending in texts and voicemails. Again, that number is 331-979-1369. Send us all of your Bulls comments, questions, and rants, and we will have some fun with them tomorrow. Just a reminder that you can find us live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Bulls underscore Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Locked On Bulls. And of course, you should be subscribing to us on wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts: iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. You can find us everywhere. So for my co-host Jordan Malley, this is Matt Peck saying have a great Tuesday, Bulls fans, and we will talk to you tomorrow. We're out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.